Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
One of the themes on today's show is going to be the fact that sometimes names can be a little tricky for me. Now, in defense of myself here for a moment, I, for the most part on this program, work without a net. I have very few notes. I just sort of look into the camera or speak into the microphone and kind of speak from the heart, if you will. That's the way in which I kind of deliver the information that we prepare on this show. But sometimes names can just be a little tricky. I can get kind of tripped up pretty easily. I'm going to give you a couple of examples of that over the course of today's show, starting with this. You know, yesterday Connor Riley was on as a guest and was mentioning Todd Monken showing up as a potential candidate for a coaching opening when it comes to UGA. My first reaction to this is that the triple option guy from Army? No, that's Jeff Monken. Todd Monken, a little bit more of a kind of a journeyman offensive coordinator, been in Cleveland and Tampa, college ranks with Oklahoma State. And it kind of all gets started by something that Mark Schlabaugh writes for ESPN when he made Georgia his number six team in the way too early top 25 that was released this week at ESPN.com. Kind of a innocuous little blurb here, but it can be enough to kind of crank up the rumor mill when it comes to UGA fans. I think we have the quote from Schlabaugh. Let me mention it to you on a radio podcast, show it to you for those on video. Schlabaugh writes, changes are expected on Kirby Smart's offensive staff as well. He says, keep an eye on former Cleveland Browns offensive coordinator Todd Monken. Now, digging a little bit more deep into what Monken's kind of been through in his career and kind of what his overarching philosophy seems to be, I think I can kind of sum up my feelings on if Georgia were to truly pursue Todd Monken and truly land him as a coach to upgrade the offensive philosophy for UGA. I think I could probably sum that up this way. I say that partially because of what I think Monken brings to the table, but also kind of partially what I believe that UGA really needs. You know, Todd Monken, when he was first hired as Tampa offensive coordinator back in 2016, and to be clear here, I guess he didn't start calling plays with the Bucs until 2018, but it was on the staff there going back to 2016. When he was first introduced as a member of the Bucs coaching staff, listen to this quote here for a moment. He says, this is Todd Monken to the Tampa Tribune. I like having fun. I don't know why it has to feel like such drudgery all the time. I mean, I'll let you decide for yourself how well that fits into what's going on here in Athens for a moment, but that sentence certainly got my attention. Monken goes on to tell the Tampa Tribune, who needs more five-yard plays? How can we be explosive? That's what the game is about, man. People like big plays. I like big plays. I mean, just on that quote alone, I feel like I kind of want to hire Todd Monken. Just on that quote alone, I kind of want to bring him in and figure out, you know, coaching title responsibility and who kind of has to answer to whom or whatever else. That quote alone to me feels like kind of exactly what Georgia needs, and the idea of things having to be drudgery all the time. Well, frankly, I think for some of us that hits a little close to home when it comes to the overall scenario at UGA, because, you know, it is certainly fair to say that Kirby Smart has kind of had his own way of talking about all of this, and I guess you can kind of decide for yourself if it's drudgery or if it's whatever else. But when you go back and you kind of listen to some of the things that Smart has said about this in the past, someone with a new set of ideas, I just think, would be really valuable. And as I've told y'all before, I think that when you look at that coaching hire that Georgia's going to make, if we assume for a moment, and by the way, there's a chance this ends up not being true, much to the chagrin of most of us, but if we assume for a moment that next coaching hire for Georgia is an offensive-minded guy, I truly believe that the overall value of what that guy brings to the table, it's as much about his persuasion skills as it is about his coaching strategic skills. In other words, what you know offensively, Monken kind of shown that he, you know, knows some of that. You know, your ability to convince a coach like Kirby Smart to follow your expertise is just as important as that expertise. You got to be a salesman in addition to a coach. It's not just strategy. It's also got to be a little bit of a persuasive skills a little bit there too. And I'll give you an example of why that's true. Let's go back and listen to Kirby Smart after the LSU game. Another one of those games, SEC championship, in which we just kind of saw Georgia sort of scuffling and fighting and scratching and clawing for every yard it could get, every point it could get. To go back and use Munkin's word from 2016, it felt a little like drudgery, unfortunately. But even in the midst of this, you know, kind of acknowledging that maybe Georgia does need to do things a little bit differently, certainly needs to have better results, even in the midst of that, there's still a sense from Kirby Smart's standpoint that the way that Georgia's chosen to do things is the right thing for this program, the right thing for this particular collection of players. So no matter who Georgia hires, if we assume it's an offensive-minded guy, that guy steps into a climate that already includes attitudes and ideas like this. Here's Smart going back to December.
You have an offense that's built around the players you have. So you take the players you have and you use their strengths. Well, with the players we have certain strengths. We usually have good pass protection. We have a good, you know, offensive line. We've got good backs. But our ability to run the ball has not been consistent this year. And people can say, well, Coach Smart wants to play man ball. Coach Smart wants to win, and we threw the ball 42 times. Now, you can say it was because we were behind, but we threw the ball early in the game, and we had some drops. We had some misses, and it's not a matter of what is your offensive philosophy. It is what is the best way to win the game.
So, listen, whoever Georgia hires steps into that room, that coaching climate, where the best way to win the game, in Smart's belief, is the way that Georgia was doing things this year. So, as I said before, you've got to be more than just a tactician, more than just a, you know, creator of offensive strategy. You've got to be also a salesman too. You've got to be able to persuade that Kirby Smart that no, maybe the best way to win isn't the way that you've been doing things. But one way or another, let me kind of bring this back to Todd Monken for a moment. And I guess I'm going to have to be, and I hate to be this way, but I guess I got to be a little bit of a wet blanket on all of this. Ultimately, I don't know how real all of this is. And y'all can kind of bear with me for a moment. I'm going to sort of express one of my crackpot theories, and you can decide for yourself if you think it's true or not. When you have a coaching opening, and when you have a rumor about who may fill that coaching opening, and when that rumor comes from the national media, you follow me so far? Coaching open, rumor about who may fill it from a reporter with a little bit of a national platform here. It has to come from one of either two sides. If a guy like Schlabaugh is writing this, it's got to come from either a source within the Georgia program or a source close to Munkin. I'm a big believer that more often than not, when a national guy writes this, it is kind of coming from a source close to the coach, more so than a source close to the program. By the way, I said the same thing when the Dan Mullen Dallas Cowboy thing kind of popped up a couple of days ago. That felt to me more like something coming from Mullen than it did something coming from the organization itself. And you don't have to look very far to see a reason why it's good for coaches or representatives of coaches to have their names kind of in the mix for a situation like this. Take, is it Joe Judge, the guy that just became New York Giants coach? It's been widely reported that one of the reasons why Judge had some leverage in those negotiations with the Giants is it was thought that Judge, had he not taken the job with the Giants, could have gone back to his alma mater and become Mississippi State head coach. When you've potentially got another job waiting for you, it kind of puts the pressure on the team that's interviewing you to decide if it wants you and then make that offer and get you to accept before you go take a job they believe is out there for you. So in Munkin's case, that could be kind of the same way there as well. So ultimately, while I like Mark Schlabaugh and certainly enjoy his work for ESPN.com, I'm not quite so sure that Munkin is quite as UGA bound as a little blurb in an ESPN.com story would suggest. However, in looking deep in what, you know, his philosophy has been, whether it be the work that he did at Oklahoma State and kind of that kind of high-powered passing attack, or even some of the stuff he's done in the NFL. Results are certainly mixed all the way around, but a good bit of experience. To me, this is exactly the kind of guy that Georgia could potentially use very well. I think it's the kind of guy the Dogs need. So if it isn't going to be Munkin, someone like Munkin, I think would be a pretty good thing for Dog fans. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. Good to have you with us, no matter how you get here, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And I was on this morning with the folks there in the Classic City. Always enjoy the chance to be able to do that. Also available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And as I said before, really appreciate Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort making it possible here today. You know, a couple of different locations for you. The great news is, whichever property you choose, they're both in less than a three-hour drive from Atlanta. So really convenient to get to. Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort, also Harrah's Cherokee Valley River. You know, hot slot machines, great table games, blackjack, everything else. Huge gaming facilities on really both of these, and state-of-the-art accommodations as well. Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort's got more than 1,100 rooms, more than 10 dining options, spa, just a really world-class getaway, short drive from Atlanta, easy to get to, a lot of fun, and coming soon, the book. Sports gaming is coming to the Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort properties. There's a website you can go to if you're watching on video on your screen. They'll tell you more about that. But you can do this. I did this the other day. It was really easy to find. Just search the book, Harrah's Cherokee Casino Sports Book, and you can find out more about that yourself. Use the search engines as your friends on that. Good to have Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort bringing Dog Nation Daily to us here today. We'll get Mike Griffith coming up in a couple of moments. Let me say one more thing about the topic I was on, and then I'm going to move on and talk about something else for a moment. When I tout for a guy like Monken, there's obviously this, thought process. Well, if he comes, that means that there's no place for James Coley, because Monken, just given his resume, is not coming to Georgia for less than true offensive coordinator, less than true play calling responsibilities, things like that. Well, I just told you a moment ago, I'm not quite so sure that Munkin's going to be the guy. I hope it's someone like Monken, someone who kind of has a little bit of a fun-loving approach to offense. I'd love to see Georgia add that to its coaching staff. But in saying that, I know this is a difficult needle to thread. I'm going to try to do it as easily as I can. In saying that, I'm not necessarily trying to push James Coley out the door, because I don't think that I think that Coley is a coach that has some value to Georgia. He's obviously been a very effective recruiter, someone that Jamie Newman himself has kind of cited as a reason why he wanted to come to UGA in the official statement that he released not all that long ago when he announced he was coming to the Dogs. So in touting some additional offensive ideas, that's not me necessarily trying to kick Coley out the door, because I don't think that he necessarily deserves to be kicked out the door. I just think Georgia needs some new, fresh ideas. And I think that Georgia needs someone who can convince Kirby Smart to use those fresh ideas in a game. And sometimes it's easier for that to happen from outside the program than it is from within the program. So I guess let me try to be very clear about this. Arguing for some offensive changes to Georgia and an upgrade to that offensive coaching staff is not necessarily from me an argument against James Coley, because I think some of the work that Coley's done here at UGA argues for itself pretty well. But Georgia needs some new ideas, and so whether it's someone of a big, heavy resume like what Munkin brings to the table, or someone who's a little less experienced who maybe could work underneath James Coley, one way or another, I hope the kinds of ideas that Georgia brings in look a little bit like what someone like Munkin would bring to the table. So with that in mind, let me go around the doghouse here for a moment. And it was really kind of funny yesterday to see a rumor get out there, and I guess get some legs. And this is another example of, I told you before that I have a really tough time to time with names. You get Todd Munkin and Jeff Munkin confused. There is a Clemson quarterback named Chase Bryce, who many of you are aware of. But there is also a Ohio State pass rusher named Chase Young. And to make things even more confusing, there's a quarterback coming into it, Alabama, named Bryce Young. So you have a Chase Bryce, a Chase Young, and a Bryce Young. The chances of me being able to keep all three of those names completely separate and completely identifiable, the chances of me pulling that off are probably just not all that great. So I'll apologize in advance for eventually probably screwing one of these names up, kind of all connected to college football here near the same time. But listen, none of us are perfect, and that's one of the ways, I guess, in which I am imperfect. But nonetheless, the point is Chase Bryce is a Clemson quarterback. And it has also been rumored, just given the way that Clemson's recruited that position, Trevor Lawrence got at least one more year in a Clemson uniform, 2021 likely his last year, moving on to the NFL after that. Clemson brings in the number one quarterback for the class of 2020, DJ Uiagalelei, a name that I think I am pronouncing right, even though I, as I told you before, have a little bit of difficulty with names from time to time. And if Uiagalelei comes in as expected and kind of earns that number two job, waiting in the wings for Trevor Lawrence to depart the program after the 2020 season, all of a sudden then you start wondering if you're if you're Chase Brice, the backup quarterback to Clemson now, is there room for me in this program? At least that's the assumption that's been out there. And there was some chatter of, well, you know, if Georgia's looking for a transfer quarterback, you know, maybe it would bring in a guy like Brice. And even really after Georgia got Jamie Newman, there was still that sort of thought of, well, maybe Georgia wants more than one transfer quarterback and likes the idea of an experienced veteran backup, someone who's played a little bit before. Brice has played for Clemson. Were Jamie Newman to get hurt or something along those lines? Adding fuel to the fire was a tweet, and I believe this has since been deleted because I tried to find this on Brice's timeline, could not find it, but one of the online publications, Saturday Down South, had taken a screen grab of this. Chase Brice tweeted a picture. Brice, of course, went to Grayson High School, so grew up in the state of Georgia, tweeted a picture of himself wearing a Georgia jersey. This is kind of the classic Quincy Carter with the black shade shadow around the 17. Here, Chase Brice putting up their hashtag new profile pic. You all know Georgia fans because you are one. It doesn't take much more than that to get everybody fired up of, well, maybe Georgia's looking to add another quarterback, and maybe this, maybe that. Matt Conley from the state, who covers the Clemson program there for that news entity, said, I guess he'd reached out to Brice and said there was really nothing to this one way or another, but a rumor mill firing up for Georgia fans about another quarterback. Sources close to Brice say it's just a picture, just me when I was a kid, but the fact that he's wearing the UGA uniform in that picture certainly gets a lot of folks' attention, so I don't know what to say. Do with that what you will, but this is kind of that fun time of the year where there are a lot of rumors out there and a lot of guessing games going on as Georgia tries to put the final pieces together for its offense, both coaching staff and I guess maybe players here a little bit too, as you get ready for 2020. It's a Dog Nation Daily presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. There is some wild stuff happening around the SEC right now. We will talk to you about that a little bit later on in the program, including a very interesting video that pops up after LSU wins the national championship. That is all on the way, but for now, let's get ready to talk to Mike Griffith, and it's great to have you with us as a part of the program as well.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Mike Griffith, who was in, by the way, New Orleans on Monday, part of his duties with the Football Writers Association of America. By the way, we'll get to a little bit of that later on. Mike and the Football Writers giving a big honor over to Georgia linebacker Azeez Ojulari. We'll talk about that before we're done here today. But Mike, before we get to that, let me bring in you on a topic we were just discussing, and I've been around Georgia fans my entire life. I will tell you what I'm sure you've learned here pretty quick. It does not take too much to get Georgia fans stirred up from time to time. A tweet yesterday from Chase Brice, the Clemson quarterback, he then deletes it. And I'm assuming the reason why he deleted it is because of all the Georgia fans and his mentions after that. It's him wearing the old classic Quincy Carter Georgia jersey. It's actually kind of nice to see that uniform kind of popping back up again. I'd forgotten. That's kind of a nice looking jersey. But I digress. The point here is some UGA fans took this as maybe a little bit of a wink and a nod towards a potential transfer from Brice. He then deleted the tweet. Some sources, I guess, that cover the Clemson program say it was just a tweet. Don't read too much into it. You did this week have a chance to talk to Chase Brice while in New Orleans for the national championship game. Did he give much of an indication anyway, one way or another, that he might be thinking about a future beyond Clemson?
Not really, as much as just that he wants to play, you know, and being behind Trevor Lawrence. You know, obviously that doesn't look like it's going to happen. Certainly not next year. I mean, I think Trevor's gone after next year, but he's got some decisions to make and what his options would be. But he was asked point blank about it, and he said, you know, I'm at Clemson now. He kind of wouldn't go there, but just in sitting down and talking with him for a few minutes, you know, he wants to play. He feels like he's prepared to play. He's one play away from playing. I mean, he's a big guy. I can tell you that. I was really impressed with his size. But you just wonder, you know, what would come to Georgia? You know, would he play in 2 years at Georgia? You know, would it be worth it to make a transfer? Would Georgia be a school that fits? I mean, or would Dwan Mathis or Carson Beck be that guy? Who knows? I guess they're competing this fall. But Kirby's not going out and getting guys to sit him on the bench. If he didn't think Jamie Newman was going to win the job, he wouldn't be bringing him in to camp. It just wouldn't happen. So right now you've got to assume until something else happens that Newman will be the guy unless Becker Mathis, you know, beats him out, and the underdogs to do that. So I don't know how much sense it would make. I don't know what that meant. It's clear that he does like Georgia. When I talked with him, I mean, Georgia didn't show a whole lot of interest in him from my conversation with him, but I couldn't say strongly enough to say that he was leaning towards Georgia.
So my feelings on this are complicated because I like both Beck and Mathis, and yet I also have to admit that if something were ever to come of this, and as of right now, nothing is, but if something were ever to come of this, speaking Mike just strictly as a fan for a moment, I think I would kind of welcome it, if for no other reason than a chance to be a part of this program now and kind of a primary backup role. And because he has played some, I would favor Bryce over both, I think, Beck and Mathis to do that for the 2020 season, and then to be in a position in 2021 to also compete with those younger guys for a chance to kind of step in place of what I certainly hope is a successful season for Jamie Newman. So I like Beck. I like Mathis a lot. I've certainly grown to appreciate him having been on campus over the course of the past year and the work that he's done to get himself back to full health. But admittedly, if this Chase Bryce thing ever became more than just UGA fans reacting to a tweet that got deleted, I got to say, I'd be in for a little bit more of that conversation, I believe.
Sure, no doubt about it. You know, it would be interesting. The only reason I think it would be unusual, and I'm not saying it can't happen because he's a Georgia kid, and you know, I think Jeff Centel, you know, the Centel intel, we all use Centel's intel too, by the way. You know, I think that Jeff knows that the guy wants to be a coach someday, and you know, there's something to be said for playing for your in-state school, right?
Yeah.
And we're all for that. But let's remember that we're all in for that if it's Chase Bryce. But remember now, Cade Mays went back to Tennessee, so the sword cuts both ways, right?
Well, let me just
so there is something.
Let me just clear that up for you. Georgia fans like it when players that are from other places come to Georgia. Georgia fans don't quite like it as much when UGA fans or UGA players leave to go back home. And there's very little problem in sort of ignoring the hypocrisy when it comes to that, I'm afraid.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I think Ohio fans are, you know, doing what they can to try and embrace Joe Burrow. Did you see where Ohio State tried to make some malarkey claim? The same Ohio State, by the way, that told Dwan Mathis on early signing day that they weren't talking to Justin Fields. You know, basically lied to his face. And thank goodness that Dwan Mathis went to Twitter and discovered that whole Fields thing was going. That's a whole another story for another day. But it would, in that sense, to me, that would make sense for Chase Bryce. But he's in, you know, right now. I mean, Clemson is the odds-on favorite to win the national championship next year, and not necessarily because we think they're the best team. But let's face it, they have the easiest path to get to the college football playoff. You know, if something happens to Trevor Lawrence, my goodness, the way he runs the ball, Bryce is, you know, he could be playing for a national championship at Clemson next season. So it'll be interesting to see unless he feels like he's been passed by that other quarterback there. It'll be very interesting to see how this plays out. But what I was getting at is there's so many schools now and the information is so readily available that players can go somewhere where they know they're going to play immediately. I don't know. What about Georgia Tech for Chase?
Oh, my gosh. Let me change the subject here for a moment and talk about the other, I guess, big rumor that's out there is how Georgia might fill this coaching opening that it currently has. And, Mike, this is kind of an unfair, I guess, place to go with any kind of real certainty because we're not even sure, like, what job Georgia's looking to hire for. People like me assume that it will be offense because of the fact we think that's where Georgia needs its help. But, I mean, there is certainly a chance that that Georgia looks at this as simply what Scott Fountain was, a special teams coordinator and, you know, things along that line. I mean, Smart certainly kept his cards close to his vest a year ago when he replaced Jim Chaney and you know, brought in James Coley. Didn't really say much to really announce either Lanning or Coley until pretty late in that process. So Smart doesn't say much about this all the way around one way or another. I think it's obvious, though, from the conversations that you and I both have had with Georgia fans that they want it to be a coaching change, or I should say an offensive coaching addition, and they want that new name, I think, I speak for the majority of Georgia fans when I say, to kind of usher in some new ideas for the program. What's your sense of where things stand right now for the coaching opening that Georgia does have and how they'll choose to fill it?
Well, I'll start with the premise that it's all about the Jimmys and Joes and not the X's and the O's because, you know, the great Joe Brady offense didn't take the New Orleans Saints very far, and I think the Tennessee Titans reminded everyone what a great running game can do, even against maybe the greatest coach in NFL history, Bill Belichick. So let's not get too carried away with the schemes.
Let's focus on the fact that you better have great players running those routes and catching those passes. As Kirby said after the SEC championship game, when he challenged the Georgia fan base to watch the film, we're running the same plays they are. The same formation. We can't get our guys open one-on-one. Okay, let that register with you. There is no magic potion. There is no magic formula. Okay, that's very far overrated. It's low-hanging fruit. Now, what Kirby will look for is someone that fits his staff and fits his ideals and fits the chemistry. Georgia is not going to go full-on spread 50 passes a game. Ain't going to happen with this head coach. Now, he'll modify it, and you've got a quarterback right now in Jamie Newman and Carson Beck and Dwan Mathis that are dual threats to the extent that Burrow and Lawrence are. These guys have escapability. I'm not here to throw down on Jake Fromm. Jake was Jake, but he was not a runner. He did not have good escapability. His mobility was limited, and he passed on several opportunities to run for yardage for whatever reason, maybe because there was no safety net or quarterback behind him that could lead him to wins at championship level. This is a new year. There's depth. There's mobility. You're going to see RPO action. You're going to see quarterbacks throwing. It's not going to come down to somebody with a magic playbook that with plays that nobody's ever seen. That person's not out there. What is out there, though, is maybe some name people that could help them attract some talent, that could recruit effectively, that would fit with the coaches that are already on staff, Matt Luke and James Coley. And that is very much a two-headed monster. So also make that a very strong basis for your speculation. Matt Luke is heavily involved. He was heavily involved in the Sugar Bowl. He's a very good coach who's been around a lot of great coaches, from Hugh Freeze to Rich Rodriguez. When I say great coaches, I mean from the sense of their X's and O's, not necessarily their off-the-field conduct. Hugh Freeze, Rich Rodriguez, David Cutcliffe, Philip Fulmer, he's been around a lot of great offensive mind, and he's been an offensive coordinator himself. So I don't think you need the X's and the O's, B.A. I do think a splash name that would draw recruits would be something that would entice Kirby.
But to be fair, though, I mean, if you want to bring Joe Brady's name back into this, LSU was essentially outside the top 50 in offensive efficiency for 2018 with essentially all the same players. They were number one in 2019. Isn't that statistical evidence that sometimes a coach's new ideas really do make a huge difference, because it was essentially the same players year over year, just much better results this past season?
I would say the application of different ideas. I don't think there's anything new about what Joe Brady's doing. I don't think he recreated the wheel. I think the whole key is to find an offensive philosophy and to use plays that maximize the talent that you have. LSU had three incredible receivers. They would be crazy not to put those guys on the field at the same time and throw the football as much as they did. Georgia had arguably the most explosive and best running back in the country. At least that's what the NFL draft rankings tell you. And they had a very poor receiving core, especially after Lawrence Cager got hurt. They, conversely, would have been crazy to try to throw the ball 50 times to receivers who drop the ball or don't get open, rather than handing it to the best running back in college football. So it comes down to using what you have, and it comes down to getting the right kind of players that can be effective. Now, I think Kirby's smart. If you give him three or four great receivers, he'll air it out. And if you put him in a football game where he feels like he needs to throw the football a lot, he will. And we've seen that with Jake Fromm against Alabama in SEC championship games. And we saw that with a very aggressive approach against LSU. They threw the ball quite a bit early on because that's what the game plan dictated. That's how Kirby approaches it. He doesn't look at it like we're going to have this new package and we're going to run it against whoever we play. He's going to look at it like we need to have great players, and we need to put game plans. We need to be flexible enough to have game plans where we can manipulate and take advantage of the matchups that we have. That's not going to change.
You've talked to a lot of people who know Jamie Newman, the new quarterback at Georgia. From those conversations, and obviously we've read a lot from you at DogNation.com about this, but what's your overall take on who Newman is, both a player and a person, based on the conversations you've been able to have with people?
I mean, it's a huge get. Just an unbelievable pickup. You know, I'm loving the idiots out there on social media that are pointing to, you know, oh, he was at Wake Forest, he can't be good. Oh, he had a bad game. Keep talking, folks, because you're going to be changing your screen names in about 6 or 7 months. Okay, there are great players who play at schools that aren't as successful. And oh, by the way, Wake was averaging about 485 yards per game and went 8-4. They were 7-1 in November, just like Georgia. Now, they didn't play the same schedule, but they sure as hell don't have the same talent either. I like everything I've heard, whether I've talked to Mark Richt, I talked with the Florida State defensive coordinator just about a half an hour ago. He had to prepare for him as well. I talked with Brent Venables, the Clemson DC. I talked with Clemson safety Tanner Muse, Isaiah Simmons. Look, these guys don't have to say nice things, okay? They don't have to. The Florida State defensive coordinator, it was a private conversation on the telephone. He wasn't sitting in front of a camera where he had, you know, this is a guy I've known for 10 years. If the guy wasn't that good, he would tell me that. He didn't have to be quoted saying good things, but you will read a story very soon about what Harlan Barnett had to say about Jamie Newman. This guy's the real deal. And, you know, I put the number story up. His passing numbers were comparable to Jake's. He had the same situation happen. He lost a couple of receivers, which makes a big difference when you don't have depth. But I'll say this, B. I'm just going to say this. Jake Fromm is special, and you can make a case. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks Georgia's ever had. And Jamie Newman hasn't done anything yet. But I'm going to leave the possibility open that Georgia could be better at the position this year.
We will certainly see how that goes. Another transfer that Georgia brings in, Trey McKitty. This is a name that I think also has a chance to really pay some dividends for UGA. I like experience at the tight end position in particular because of just the physical maturity that's required to play it at the SEC level. I like some of the guys that Georgia has, and yet being able to bolster that with someone like McKitty who's put up some stats, I think that matters. And I guess I'm also curious to get your thoughts on what Georgia's getting in McKitty.
Well, you know, the Dogs were really chasing Kitty on the trail there for a while, even out of high school.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Sorry, BA. I had to go there. Again, another guy that I talked to, a lot of people about, and he's the modern-day tight end. Listen, he's not the dual tight end, but if you look at Georgia's offense and the way they use tight ends, and I don't think this is going to change, Charlie Warner was kind of the blocking tight end who could also catch, and then you saw Eli Wolf kind of slide into that Isaac Nauta role as the receiving tight end. And I think that's what you're going to see here with McKitty. He's going to kind of fill that slot that Nauta and Eli were in. I think Kirby likes the flexibility that formation allows you now. He's not known as an animal as far as his blocking. So he'll have to show the coaches that he can do the open field blocking. Kirby and his blocking, and you saw it this year, okay? All the talk about Kirby and his blocking, everybody rolls their eyes, but listen, the difference between last year and this year and Georgia not having explosive runs was those receivers weren't as good at downfield blockers as the Riley Ridleys and Jason Stanleys of the world. They dropped off there. So you saw corners and safeties that were normally tied up with outstanding downfield blocking, making plays because these freshman receivers and some of these other guys that filled in, they're not as good. They're not as physical. They're just not. It just is what it is. They are not as good as downfield blockers. So you didn't have the explosive 60, 70-yard runs that you had the year before. So it's going to be interesting to see, how he fits in, how quickly he fits in. But again, Kirby has shown you when he goes to the portal, he gets guys, or when he gets the grad transfers, I should say, when they get the graduate transfers, they get guys that produce. I thought he did an excellent job bringing in Cager and Wolf last year. Both of those guys were paramount to success at different times, certainly Cager to a greater extent, but Wolf with some key plays as well. And I expect the same, even more of an impact with Jamie Newman and McKitty. And there's still a couple other guys out there we've been talking about.
Let me squeeze in one more final question. I apologize for keeping you long, but you're a very active member of the Football Writers Association of America this week in New Orleans. It was announced that Azeez Ojulari, as a redshirt freshman, going to make a freshman All-American status there. And I think the Ojulari story for Georgia this year was a really fun one. A guy that was injured for a lot in 2018, but used that bad Sugar Bowl for most of the team as a good springboard for him to set himself up to play in 2019, put on some weight, and really had, I thought, a sensational season and became the kind of guy that Georgia could utilize in a lot of different scenarios. I guess kind of a two-pronged approach here. First of all, just what Ojulari was able to accomplish this year and the way in which he did that coming off what was a pretty significant injury recovery at the end of the 2018 season.
Yeah, but yeah, I think it flew under the radar. And, I think Azeez is a guy that should be on, preseason All-SEC list. I mean, a lot of these guys should. I saw Connor wrote a really good story this morning about Richie LeCount. you know, he's a guy that should be looked at as a preseason All-SEC guy who hasn't gotten much love nationally. Or, you know, hopefully these guys will come to the forefront. Hopefully it doesn't fall on deaf ears that Georgia had the best defense in the SEC. They got the numbers to back it up. Number one in total defense, scoring defense, rushing defense. Number eight in pass efficiency defense. I think they ended up number one in the nation in scoring defense. And that's playing a hell of a schedule. You know, that's counting LSU, all right? They played the best defense in history, or excuse me, the best offense in history. You know, they had to play that team. They had to play Notre Dame. You know, they had to play Bo Nix in November after the kid had six or seven games under his belt. I think they just scored again against Alabama. You know, so Georgia played some good football teams and had a great season. They bring back 9 of 11 guys that started in the Cotton Bowl, or excuse me, the Sugar Bowl. To get to your point on Azeez, he was also one of 7 semifinalists for Player of the Year. So it was above and beyond just being a freshman All-American. He was a slam dunk. Obviously, I'm a part of that committee. I've started that team in 2001. And, you know, there were other Georgia guys considered. You know, it's hard to make freshman All-American. There's a lot. There's 4 guys from the SEC out of the 32. Most years, it seems like the SEC has 5 or 6, but it takes a lot. You know, George Pickens led the SEC freshman in receiving yards, but he also got suspended twice. And that's just not good, okay? It's just not. And there were other people who had better numbers over the course of the season. So it's fun to debate and argue. You know, I thought BA, and I'm sure you've already gone there, but I just want to give my 2 cents on this because I'm very passionate about this, and I had a chance to see Herschel Walker this weekend. You know, I am really disappointed, almost to the point of angry, that Herschel Walker was not picked number one as the greatest college football player ever. And it's not because I cover Georgia. It's because of what he did. You know, we started an award this weekend in the Football Writers to go to the legend, the freshman legend. And every year we're going to honor a former freshman that had a legendary mark on the game. And Herschel Walker in that 1981 Sugar Bowl with a dislocated shoulder, carrying 35 times for over 150 yards against the number one run defense in the country at Notre Dame, has to be one of the most inspirational and greatest performances ever. But beyond that, if you look at his numbers and his consistency and the way he carried that program to the championship level, a mark that still overshadows, you know, the classic city here. You know, 34 and Herschel, they're iconic numbers. Now, Jim Brown was a tremendous NFL player, but he was not an impactful college player to the degree that Herschel was.
Yeah.
And you can look at the numbers. I think he has 22 career touchdowns. Now, I voted on this panel, and the way they did it...
Oh, so you're to blame, man. So now we know who we can blame for this.
Well, there was 150 people that voted on it. Thanks. So I was one of 150. But the way they did this was through, like, emails. It wasn't like you got in a room. It wasn't like you put 1 through 10. They would send you, like, an email, and you would say, this guy or this guy. Now, this guy or this guy. Now, yeah. And it was just endless of this guy or this guy or this guy or this guy for 6 months. So that's how it happened, and that's how it worked. But, man, Herschel Walker was the greatest ever. And, you know, I respect ESPN and the 150, and I loved it. I thought it was a great project. But I was very disappointed because I think Herschel Walker was the greatest ever.
No, I think that's well said, Mike. We appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. I know we've got some good stuff coming up at DogNation.com in the days ahead. We'll look forward to reading that and, again, getting a chance to speak to you soon.
Thanks,
D.
I appreciate it.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So after all that about being mad about the Herschel Walker thing, come to find out he's one of the guys that voted on it. So I'm kidding. I'm obviously kidding. Interesting stuff there from Mike Griffith, as per usual. Read more from him at DogNation.com. We appreciate him being a part of the program here today, and we will transition to our FCC Through and go cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And I've been telling you, when you go on one of these Royal Caribbean cruises, one of the things you're going to love is that world-class entertainment that's available for you on the ship. I'm talking about Broadway award-winning musicals, the drone shows, the ice skating shows, so much more. It's just an amazing, amazing vacation experience, and some of the stuff that happens while you're on the ship is one of the best parts of it. And if you're on one of the Oasis-class ships, you even get the Aqua Theater shows, which is like an amazing thing to think that they're doing these big jumps and high dives and stuff like that on a ship that's also moving at sea. It seems incredibly dangerous, but these are obviously trained professionals, so they're able to do it. Also, hotspots, the nightclub stuff, you know, whether it be Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade, or the Schooner Bar, the Red Nightclub, all these places where you can hear live music and stuff like that. It's just an amazing getaway, and you really feel like you are getting away when you're on a Royal Caribbean cruise. For 50 years, they've been defining what bold entertainment's all about. So reach out to your travel professional. Let them know that you're ready to be on one of these great vacations. Or let me make a recommendation for you. Our friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority, you can call them 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. Let them know you heard about them with us right here on Dog Nation Daily. All right, big news out of the SEC. Just a day after winning the national championship, it has been reported that LSU offensive assistant Joe Brady, who is on his way to become the new offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers. So if you happen to be a Georgia fan who's also a Falcons fan, that's bad news for you. In the division now, working with new coach Matt Rhule. But it's also interesting for LSU. Now, let me say a couple of things about this. First of all, Ed Orgeron's ability to replace Joe Brady, I think it's going to end up being better than people think it is. I do think that a lot of the stuff that was written about Orgeron this week is true. The fact that he speaks in that, you know, deep drawl, and he kind of has that cartoonish personality, that has all been used as a great distraction to take away from the fact that Orgeron behind the scenes is a very meticulous coach. And it certainly seems like, based on some of the stuff that's coming out of Louisiana right now, that LSU will look inward for this promotion, a guy that kind of worked with Brady, and I guess someone that Burrow was kind of close with in addition to Brady, maybe the person that gets that kind of passing game coordinator tab. Maybe this program continues to value Steve Ensminger, the true offensive coordinator in name, more than maybe I realized. But one way or another, Orgeron's ability to replace Brady, I think, will actually be underrated, because Orgeron has proven that he is willing to be the CEO-style coach, and he's willing to, because he trusts his own alpha male kind of personality, that he doesn't feel like that he's made smaller in a room by having other smart people with him. So I think LSU fans are right to trust Orgeron to make this coaching hire. Beyond that, here's what I think becomes really interesting with Brady in the NFL, likely with the Panthers, a team that's pretty meager offensively this season, although they do have a pretty interesting weapon in Christian McCaffrey, and Joe Burrow going to what we assume is the Cincinnati Bengals with the number one overall pick, a dreadful team. Don't we now get a pretty fun experiment of really who is the one most, who should be credited most with the offensive success that LSU enjoyed this season? I mean, it's been said before that Joe Burrow may have had the best season that any quarterback's had in college football history, and he deserves credit for that. But how about ultimate credit? Did all this come about in 2019 because Burrow's just so good, or did all of this come about because of how smart Joe Brady is utilizing what Joe Burrow brings to the table? I happen to think that if you force me to choose between one or the other, given the fact that we've seen Burrow without Brady, I'm going to give more of that credit to Joe Brady. And if you had to ask me which is of these two guys is more likely to be successful in the NFL, Brady as an offensive coordinator, maybe making his move up from there, or Burrow as a quarterback, once again, if I can only bet on one, I'm going to bet on Brady more so than Burrow here. I do think coaching matters, and I think it matters more than Mike Griffith seems to, who spoke about that topic a little bit earlier in our show. So let's watch this, and let's see where that goes. Here's a fun story involving LSU as we're cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Did you see the video that popped up after the national championship game on Monday? I think that for those of you watching on video, we can show some of this to you. It's captured by Brody Logan, a reporter. Here is Odell Beckham Jr. with a big wad of what looks to be cash, giving it to some LSU players, including one of the top wide receivers there, Mr. Jefferson. And after all of this, this obviously got the attention of a lot of media, a lot of rival fans, and, you know, things of that nature. There's also a very nervous person or two behind Beckham as he kind of goes through all of this. It was kind of brought, well, what's going on here with Odell Beckham Jr., the former LSU player? Is he paying off LSU players right there on the field? LSU has come out with a statement to say that what Beckham was giving out was fake money, and it very well might be. If you're watching on video, you just saw the same thing I did. It doesn't look to be fake to my eyes from here, but I'm not there on the field. I don't know if this is counterfeit or not. I do think it's interesting that if it is, isn't that in itself a crime to be in possession of fake money? But one way or another, this is kind of what LSU's choosing to say about this. I believe there's a lesson learned from all this. When it comes to, like, some sort of accusation against you, whether it's a relatively silly thing like Beckham on the field after a national championship game or something more serious like what Missouri's dealt with over the last couple of years. There are two kinds of programs. There are programs who take that really, really seriously and get like really, really buttoned up and professional about how they handle this. And there are programs who say, we don't really care what you think. You can go back and look at the annals of history, especially the last couple of decades. The only programs who ever win against the NCAA are the ones who say, we don't really care what you think. We don't really care what the public perception of this is, which was essentially what LSU's response was to the Odell Beckham Jr. money fiasco at the end of the national championship game. This is on video. It doesn't look good, but it's fake money. Nobody's really buying that, but we don't really care. You know, we're just moving on with our lives. The people who choose to have the we don't really care, we're moving on attitude, they almost always win. So keep that in mind for any kind of future thing that might go down. A couple other stories here, and I'm going to make these fast. Looks like Oregon is either in the process of making it official or getting ready to hire Joe Moorhead, former Penn State offensive coordinator, Mississippi State head coach, as its next OC. If you go and read some of the things that were happening in Eugene, Oregon this year with an NFL-bound quarterback and a really good offensive line, and yet at times an offense that just seemed to be a little bit conservative and not all Ducks fans happy. So this will be a really interesting contrast between what Oregon does with a big, bold coaching hire. Moorhead, one of the best offensive coordinator names that potentially could have been available. Don't like him as a head coach in the South. As an offensive coordinator, I think Joe Moorhead does just fine. So Oregon makes a very bold move to try to address what some Ducks fans thought were some offensive woes. It'll be an interesting comparison with Georgia, who may have a little bit less bold decision itself in terms of how it tries to upgrade its offense for 2020. And I guess in the midst of all this, you've got Notre Dame as well looking to promote its quarterback's coach Tommy Rees, a former Fighting Irish quarterback, to its offensive coordinator position, a move that has not necessarily been all that well received in South Bend up to this point. One more final thing as we're cruising on the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. The tweet from Kirk Herbstreit caught my attention, kind of touting the SEC here. Let me read this to you. After the bowl season, Herbstreit says, well, the, quote, overrated SEC is at it again. Finished 9-2 in postseason play, won the national championship. Thank goodness the officials, opposing coaches, players, and somehow even the announcers helped them pull off this feat. It's now up to the NFL draft to keep that bias going in April. Hashtag sarcasm, says Kirk Herbstreit. Obviously, I agree with what Herbstreit's saying there. I do believe the SEC is the best league in college football. I think it's interesting that Herbstreit says this now, coming off a year in which the SEC just had. And I guess my only point in bringing this up is, I feel like you've got to remember this if you're a Georgia fan or just a random SEC fan who may be happening to listen to me right now. Because what's going to happen is Kirk Herbstreit coming up pretty soon is going to say something bad about Georgia or bad about some SEC team, and everyone's going to pile on him for being an SEC hater. When the truth is, Herbstreit in this very high-profile position, despite the fact that his kids are on the roster at Clemson and he himself played at Ohio State, has actually been a little bit more pro-UGA, a little bit more pro-SEC than sometimes he gets credit for. I'm not always a huge fan of Herbstreit's Twitter persona. I think he's like one of the worst users of Twitter of any famous person that I can think of. He just seems to get in too many arguments as far as I'm concerned. But in terms of saying good things about the SEC, he probably does a little more of that than some people realize, and so maybe he should get a little credit for that. One way or another, that's cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, let me get back to Georgia here for a moment. And in just for a couple of minutes, let me talk about what I think is a big basketball game for Georgia tonight against Tennessee. Both teams have the same record, 10-5, but have gone very different ways towards getting there, especially recently. You know, Georgia just got blown out against Auburn, let it slip away against Kentucky. Tennessee just had a hard-fought win against South Carolina going back to Saturday. So I would argue that Tennessee may be among the more disappointing teams in the SEC up at this point in the season. A winnable game for Georgia, who really, if you start your SEC play 0-3 after beating Memphis in the final non-conference game, going to be hard to take you seriously much more beyond this. Tough stretch, but you got to show some signs of life. And to listen to some of the things that Tom Crean's been saying recently, especially after giving up more than 80 to Auburn on Saturday and some issues against Kentucky, some of this is on the defensive end of the floor, maybe even most of this on the defensive end for the Dogs. Here is what Tom Crean said about that.
We had some scoring, but we didn't have a lot of scoring. And I think with young teams especially, they start thinking about the last shot or the next shot more than they think about the next stop. That's something you have to deal with. And I think some of that happened. And I think some of that happens when you don't have that catalyst on the defensive end that's setting the tone and setting the table for everybody else. And when the communication's not coming from all five, it's still got to get propelled by a couple of guys.
Listen, I think what Crean's saying there is absolutely true, that when it comes to a young team, there's more of a natural motivation sometimes on offense than it is on defense. But Georgia keeping pace with the top echelon teams in the SEC, it's going to be determined more by its defense than its offense. I think that's just ultimately true. Now, one of the things to kind of go back to the game in which that quote from Crean came from, the Kentucky game, it was also somewhat controversial, was Crean's decision to rest Edwards a bit in the second half, leading up to, you know, Edwards in the stretch run, but also an opportunity for Kentucky to extend a lead against the Dogs. Crean got a little criticism from UGA basketball fans about that, but when he was asked about that in the post-game press conference, certainly defended his actions and really kind of compared Edwards to one of Edwards' heroes going back to the past, Victor Oladipo, who played with Crean at Indiana. Here's what Crean said about that and his substitution patterns and how he handles his minutes.
On a team that was number one in the country at Indiana, Victor Oladipo played 28 minutes a game. Cody Zeller, they played 30. We were number one for like 13 weeks. There's certain nights guys are going to have to play a lot of minutes, but you've got to get them to rest because you've got to be able to look ahead and see the stretch run. And then sometimes that's just the way it works out. We don't have a 40-minute guy in this team.
I think the point here, though, is when it comes to Georgia comparing it what happened with Tom Crean in Indiana, which presumably is a deeper roster just given the way the Hoosiers can recruit, Georgia's a little thinner than that. And I think the point here for some Georgia fans is, for as much fun as Edwards has been to watch, and he has been, I think it's time tonight against Tennessee for him to take over a game early. You know, he's taken over some games late when sometimes the outcome's already been decided, but tonight's a night against a pretty good SEC team for him to put his stamp on this game early, and hopefully he's on the floor enough to get a chance to do just that. All right, we'll get ready to wrap things up here today on our program. Looking forward to Georgia basketball tonight against Tennessee. I think it'll be a fun one. I think it'll be a fun chance for Georgia to provide a little bit of the spark that it also gave when it beat Memphis a couple of weeks ago. A chance to get some Dog football fans interested in the basketball product. That's always something we're in favor of around here because we like college basketball. So hopefully Georgia can go out there and get a good win tonight against the Tennessee Vols. And anytime you can beat the Vols, always a good thing. Also fun to beat another one of Georgia's rivals, those lousy, stinking Gators. We do our Gator Hater Updater on this program each and every day, and happy to see that number keep on climbing. We believe it has a chance to keep on climbing even beyond this year, but for now, we'll keep watching it grow 1,173 days. That's how long it's been. It's our Gator Hater Updater. We appreciate all of you being a part of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. A lot of news still to come for the Dogs. We're following all of it for you, and we'll see you right back here again tomorrow.